He is Robin Leach. He is Jada Markin.
This is Car Keys.
Well, good morning, good day to this edition of Car Keys with Jada Markin and Robin Leach. And we have a number of topics that I think we're going to cover in this show you're going to be listening to or you're listening to. And the first one is a topic that I have quite a bit of interest in because I own, I'm responsible for four Jeep Cherokees currently existing in my family. And they went out of production in the last iteration of them in 2023-24. And they have now finally revealed in the form of a delivery of a new Jeep Cherokee, 2026 model year, I believe, which is I have been to my dealer to see personally, but not to be able to drive. And I think I had earlier read a article in Motor Trend magazine who was not particularly impressed by the new version of the Cherokee. And it got me thinking I wasn't going to be impressed by the new version of the Jeep Cherokee. But I will say that visually on the floor of the showroom, that it was quite a nice looking vehicle, both inside and out. It is larger than the current crop of Cherokees that I am very familiar with. It does not have the same drivetrain. I'm not sure what that's going to do. I think I came away thinking it will probably sell well for those people who want to have a Cherokee version of the Jeep lineup and probably will never use it off-road, which is where I think the new Cherokee might not be as adaptable to off-roading as what I think the existing my crop of Cherokees is. First of all, it comes with a lot of new technical equipment and technology that was not available in the old version. That is probably a good thing and a bad thing, depending on who you are and what your knowledge base is and what you like about the existing Jeep Cherokees versus what you may like about or not like about the new one. The engine and drivetrain is markedly different than the old line of Jeep Cherokees in that there is no longer a multi-speed transmission, at least currently available in the new ones. It is using a CVT transmission, which Jay will comment more on later on, I think, which is a basically a speed. What is it? It doesn't have any individual speeds, at least in the planetary gearing system of the old transmissions. Sometimes they can make them feel like they have different gearings in them, as Subaru can in theirs. But it also comes with one engine. It's a turbocharged four-cylinder engine with lower horsepower than the turbocharged engines in the past generation. But it's also a hybridized as well. And the good news about it is if you look at the sticker, and we'll get to that in a minute, the sticker rating for MPGs on this new Cherokee are between 35 and 39 miles per gallon, depending on the way it's driven. Back to that comment about sticker miles per gallon figures, which is on many new cars, if not all new cars that are produced. It tells the potential buyer that it's going to get a city rating, a highway rating, and sometimes a combined rating of what you could get if you were to drive the car in the most economical mode that you could possibly imagine doing. Those figures alone are often inaccurate in real life use of vehicles because you have conditions in which you park vehicles and leave the engines running, or you have vehicles that you start up in the morning remotely from your kitchen window and let them run 10 minutes to warm up the interior so you're comfortable when you get in. Both things which diminish the actual miles per gallon rating that you'll get per tank full of fuel if you were to be compulsively keeping notes about that kind of thing. And I'm one of those people.
Let me get back to that Jeep Cherokee, Robin,
Yes.
for a second. What in the world would make you leap over the snowbank and want to buy another Jeep Cherokee?
Versus what?
Well, that's my question. So how does it compare to everything else on the market? To me, it
Okay,
just looks like
well,
another bland, generic SUV that can be
out there.
compared to everything else out there.
It's a good question. That question is probably applicable to almost any car that you might have been driving prior to a new version of that car coming out. I am highly favorable towards my edition of the Cherokees. I think they have been perfect for me, and from the 2014, which is the first time I ever bought a Jeep, to the current latest model, which is the 2020. And I do not have newer versions, but I have four versions in between those 2 year brackets. And
So,
I don't drive all four. These are members of my family that drive two of the four, and I drive two of the four.
one at a time, I presume.
Only one at a time, yes. But I absolutely love the existing, the older version of the Jeep Cherokees from a number of factors.
I think we know that.
Yes. And the new one
So
is
maybe
going to
we can
be
move on from
equally
the Jeep
acceptable.
Cherokee.
The new one is going to be equally acceptable to the probably the normal Jeep buyer, which I may not be, who does not much use it much more than liking Jeeps in general to do their daily driving throughout the life of their car ownership. And I think the new Jeep Cherokee is going to be very fine for probably maybe 90% of the people who buy them. And the 10% that don't like them will be somebody like me that decides they don't want a CVT transmission because I don't think it's going to be as functionally efficient and capable in maybe some off-road conditions that I might want to use my Jeep for, which I've done with the existing.
So, how do you see the future of the Jeep brand in the whole Stellantis
Lineup.
big
Well,
mess that I see? I mean, they just took a $26 billion deduction in the last quarter of 2025.
what?
Well, on the on like a lot of like a few other manufacturers to compensate for their errors in judging
Electrification.
electrification, yes, which
I don't see it as a problem. If I think they've changed, I think we mentioned this in a recent show that they have eliminated the plug-in hybrid lineup of all the Jeep models, from the Wrangler 4xe to the Grand Cherokee, versions of those cars, which used a combination of plug-in capability, battery, and transmission and gasoline engines. They're going to stick with hybrid stuff. This new Jeep is a hybrid Jeep. It does not require a plug-in. Its mileage rating on the sticker is extraordinarily attractive for people who look at that kind of thing for an SUV type of vehicle. SUVs are not normally, I think, before the hybrids came out, and Toyota is one, and Honda is another one.
so why would
And
somebody buy a Jeep Cherokee versus a Toyota?
because they like their previous Jeeps, if they own them, to want to stay with Jeep. I don't think it's anybody who buys a Toyota or is driving a Toyota is going to necessarily change to a Jeep, for example,
So
unless they
you're
just like to change models because they like to drive different cars between their leases or their ownership of past models.
so you think brand loyalty is still a thing
I think
in
brand loyalty is probably a good thing for Stellantis, as well as it certainly is in the Hondas and the Toyotas and the Hyundais and the Kias and the Porsches and the normal lineup.
Yeah,
So
but the
hard to say otherwise.
Toyota, what's the name of the little SUV, is the best-selling car in the world. So, trying to retain the customer base makes a lot of sense. Same thing with the Honda CR-V. Those are vehicles that sell in mass numbers.
That is
I
correct. They're very
the Jeep
popular.
Cherokee has not sold in mass numbers compared to these vehicles. So
Well,
how
no,
do you gain new customers? And I don't think that the Jeep
you don't
Cherokee.
gain new customers very easily. I would agree with you with what you're summarizing and implying by that comment. If you've got an excellent product out there and you've got users who recognize that they are driving something of considerable level of excellence for them and they're satisfied with it, they're going to stick with it. But I know people who lease one brand of cars for a lease and then they want to go try something else just because they want to have something different to drive for the next lease term. I think Subarus are excellent, but I'm bored with Subarus visually, and I haven't a desire. My family owned a Subaru probably 50 years ago when they were little box cars, much less.
No, they're big box cars.
Yeah, exactly. And they were very popular because they were then at that time. They were functionally adequate for many, many people. They lasted a long time, although they rusted out a lot. And
We still do.
I don't think the new ones rust out. I don't think I you know, I'm very impressed with the Jeep so far. I don't have any signs on my 2014 Jeep, and we live in a rust belt for vehicle usage, as you know, with the salt and the winter weather. But there is no body degradation of my 2014 Jeep now having 130,000 miles on it and going strong. Conversely to the old Subarus and the tin boxes that were sometimes they were claimed to be made out of recycled steel. I don't know. But we were digressing from the Jeep comment, but I'm almost through with it. I think the
Good.
new Jeep is going to sell. I don't think it's going to sell in record numbers or over the old one, but I think it'll make, keep some Jeep loyalists in Jeeps and lose some Jeep loyalists. And they're going to lose me because I don't have any interest. No, I haven't driven it yet. It's bigger than my current Jeep, and my current Jeep is a perfect size for me. I don't need it. But I do know, for example, that one person who had a Jeep Cherokee purchased it and found out they couldn't put a wheelchair behind the rear seat because it was too large. They couldn't close the rear lift gate when they had a wheelchair, folded wheelchair in back for somebody who needed to use that. The new Jeep is going to take care of that. It's like people who, you know, have two pair, sets of golf clubs and a Porsche or a front engine car or electric car. And the trunks have diminished in size in some and aren't big enough to hold, you know, a set, one set or two sets of golf clubs. You know, those people are minuscule in numbers. They're not going to buy a particular vehicle for that kind of thing. But that's the way we all choose vehicles. You know, we have more fabulous vehicles to choose going forward when we want to change cars or end one
So,
lease and start another.
speaking of that, I was looking, reading about industry news and where the big three, if they still exist, are going, and how China is taking over a good chunk of markets everywhere, including China now has 10% of the European market, which is should be an eye opener.
The locals, yes.
Where was I going with that?
I'm not sure, but you are segueing into some subjects that we can continue on, so continue.
Well, I just yeah, I wanted to talk about a car that I actually drove in the last week, and you know
Yeah,
that.
yes, you do.
And it's
Let's
not a
bring it to
brand
the
new
INX
car. It's been
5.
on the market for a few years, and I always saw it when it came out as the competitor to Tesla 3s and Ys, and that is the IONIQ 5 by Hyundai, which, Robin, you being a Hyundai fan,
Enthusiast, yep.
yeah, I'm surprised that you haven't. Have you even driven one, an
I have
IONIQ 5?
not driven one. The
Okay, they've been
listeners
out for four or
know I
five
own
years
a
now.
2013 Hyundai Hybrid Sonata, which I plan on keeping
Yeah,
for
we know that. Let
visual
me talk about the
reasons.
IONIQ 5 for a second.
Yep,
This is a
go ahead.
fully electric car that's been around for a while, and it I think it has a pretty cool boxy look. It's categorized as an SUV, but it kind of looks like a hatchback to me. And
Me
when you
too.
sit in the car, it has this. It has, first of all, it looks well finished. It looks a little more polished than a Tesla from the inside. while retaining that modern look and big screens in front of you. But the big screens kind of give you pretty conventional information, and there are still buttons in the car. But the driving experience is just, I thought, was fabulous. I did about a little over 100 miles round trip on secondary roads. The car is, like all electric cars, is fast, it's comfortable, it's quiet, it does everything well. And I just thought it was just a great all-around car. And they do sell in pretty good numbers, and it is still Hyundai's number one, I think, number one selling electric vehicle.
What is the price range for those Ioniq 5s? In the 30s?
No. I think they start in the low 40s.
Okay.
And you have, you have two-wheel drive versions, so you have four-wheel drive versions. They don't have exceptional range, right? I think the maximum range is around 280 miles. And if we get stuck with that 300 miles range in mind, they fall a little bit short. I had an 80% charge, a normal everyday 80% charge when I started my journey in the car. And I had like a 210 mile range, I think, which was plenty to do what I had to do. And yeah, it's a great all around car. And I think people who are looking at electric cars should still put it on or close to the top of their list.
Okay,
But
that's
anyway, enough
great.
about the Ioniq 5.
Okay, let's keep on the electric car topic
Oh,
for a
I know
minute
where I was
because
going. Hold
I
on.
want to talk about it in based on brutal weather conditions that the northwest corner and has just experienced as this show is being done, with the fact that we had temperatures sub-zero recently in the mornings. And not only did they do the affect electric car ranges, which you can tell us more about in 30 seconds or so, but they also affect quality level of batteries, condition level of batteries, because I had a vehicle that failed to start at the minus six temperature that should have started easily and failed to start. And I attribute it to the age of the battery, which didn't not show that it was going to fail in a minus six condition, which happened very recently, and required a jump start with cables, no less, as opposed to jump packs, which I have discovered are very prone to not working because of lithium ion battery power packs that do not apparently work well in cold weather, starting really truly dead or low level non-starting functioning batteries.
How old was your battery?
The one that failed is in a 4-year-old Jeep Cherokee, and it's
Hey.
the original battery that came with it. And it just did not start. The battery level was at 11.2 volts, which was below the starting level, which I have deemed is got to be 11.8 volts or better to actually get the engine to crank when you push the start button.
So let me tell you something. My 11-year-old Volkswagen still has its original battery. It's a diesel, which we know diesel are hard to start in cold
They are
weather.
indeed.
And in negative five weather yesterday morning, the car just fired right up.
Well, there you go. That shows you. But
Quality
let's get
vehicle,
to the
quality
cold
battery.
weather on range on electric cars. Do you have that as a topic to discuss?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I read through that article. I don't know what to make of it. I don't have an electric car. I know there's a whole thing about preheating the
Car.
batteries.
Yep.
But basically, this one test I read through it, the person had gotten in the car. It was like 20 below or 30 below, and they were going on a short drive, and it took forever to heat up the car. And yes, they lost a lot of range, but like you said, you if you get in a ICE powered car, you also you start it up and waste a lot of fuel just warming it up. So I still don't think it's a whole big issue.
I think you're right, except for when you get the a sudden a stretch of extreme weather, which we have just experienced. I don't remember having this kind of weather in many years that lasted for 48 hours around our listing area
The
recently.
skiing is good.
Skiing is fine. The brutal wind is was not good, and the temperatures produced weaknesses in a couple of my battery ICE car batteries recently that led me to talk about cold weather with batteries. But electric cars are known to lose a certain amount of range in cold weather. You say preheating uses up some of the range. I believe cold weather without preheating also afflicts electric batteries with range degradation the moment you start it up. And what may give you 300 miles in 70-degree temperature might give you 250 miles in minus six or even less, knowing that you have to use obviously heat.
So, going back to ski vehicles, what do you look at the cars in the parking lots when you go to ski areas?
Lots of SUVs. Everything has racks that can't fit skis inside. My Jeep Cherokee, you fold the seat, one half, one third, or two thirds of the seat in the back of a Cherokee, and you can slide most skis
Yeah, but
easily
okay,
out of the
so
car.
when's the last time you went skiing with a passenger in the car?
Well, one passenger, it doesn't matter because one passenger doesn't take up, doesn't mean you can't have two people in the car.
What's the coolest ski vehicle you've seen in the parking lot? I'll tell you mine in a second.
Okay, go ahead because I don't really have a coolest one I've seen in the parking lot because I don't sit
So
there
at
and.
one of our local mountains a few years ago, I saw an Audi R8. And for
Okay.
those people who don't know what an Audi R8 is, it is a
Super performance car.
Audi, a sports car that is made in collaboration with Lamborghini. It's a V10 central engine,
Engine.
all-wheel drive sports car,
How do I
two-seater
know?
only. And it had a roof rack on it, and it was driving through the snow. And I thought that was the absolute coolest ski vehicle that I saw.
Okay.
Yeah, although I did drive a couple of times when I had my Miata years ago, I did drive top down to the mountain with my skis sticking out of the car.
You did? Or you
Yes, I
were
did.
young. You were young and reckless in those days.
Now
Should
I'm
we
old and
move? Should we
reckless.
move to speed cameras in small towns?
Yes. Oh,
Okay. We want to talk a little
you
bit
think
about.
old and reckless, and then all of a sudden you think of speed cameras. You think
I
of me
know.
and okay.
Yeah. Okay, well let's give our listeners in the Northwest corner a bit of talk about what the small some of the small towns have been doing, sometimes behind outside of my knowledge base, but I've just read the article that you sent me
In the
about
Lakeville Journal,
our
yep.
small towns, and this is really right here in the Northwest corner, Sharon, Salisbury, Falls Village, Canaan, Cornwall, all
Kent.
have been doing studies of whether or not we need to put small speed cameras on our roads to offset the lack of human people in cars patrolling our roads to try to keep speed in check where it's out of control, if you want to call it over 10 miles an hour over the posted speed limits out of control, which I do not. We have seen that some areas in the country have put speed cameras up as revenue increasers and just to try to slow traffic. We have a small village in Massachusetts, Egremont, which does not need speed cameras, but they have trained the drivers that when you approach this town from either direction, you assiduously drive through those towns, this town, at the close to the posted speed limit, which I think is 30 miles an hour, without any need for even when there's no patrol, no officer sitting in the middle, ready to regulate you manually if you are exceeding that speed. But Sharon is particularly noted in this article in our local paper, has done a lot of research on it, and they did it on several roads, Route 41, Caucustown Road, Williams Road, and a few others, all of which I'm familiar with. And my one comment to the selectman Casey Flanagan is that there's not enough traffic on those roads to warrant putting speed cameras on them. Although allegedly there were 33,000 cited
No, not cited. There were
violators.
33. The study
33
was
citable events a month on
citable,
26
yes.
roads. Yeah, well, I don't know how they had 33 cars on some of those roads. Like, but maybe 33,000 cars.
Well, it was over a
Well, it is
multiple
a month.
months.
It is the hour. It's not just a day. In any event, I don't think any of our towns really need speed cameras, except, I would oppose my last comment, this comment, by saying some of the people in Sharon come down into the village from the north and from the south into the middle where you're trying to get out of the so-called shopping center or the post office or the gas station at speeds which I would call citable for excessive speeds. And maybe a speed camera in the middle of Sharon, one each direction, might be a desirable thing in some
Well, so here's the thing. I mean, the speed cameras, what is the goal? Is it revenue enhancement or is it a safety concern? And I
Well,
think
they'd
most
like
of,
to think it's a safety concern,
well,
but
of course. And that's what most official, I mean, that's what all of the officials that were interviewed in the, in all these towns all said. The goal would be to improve safety. And does so what is what is the cost and what is the benefit? And so far, none of the towns have come to the conclusion that it was worthwhile doing. There
well.
are issues. People have issues with speed cameras in general, and that is a thing in this country versus other countries. What I find crazy about the whole proposition is that even if you had speed cameras, you'd have by law, you there's a whole legal process involved, but you would, by law, every single citable offense would have to be reviewed
I know you read
by a
the
live
article.
person,
I know that.
and that's just, I mean, that just defeats the whole purpose to
Well,
me.
I think it
And
takes
it
up.
also affects, I mean, in these small towns, that means that somebody in the town hall, let's say, or your local resident trooper knows exactly who's doing what speed, where, what time. And yes, I think there is a privacy concern that is totally legitimate. I have no problems with in theory, like it's done in Europe, having speed cameras in area, like in school areas, like on Main Street, where you have dangerous situations and where keeping people in check will really help.
There's one.
Yes. Now, yeah, I think it was in North Canaan, where they came to the conclusion that they were better off having radars with the signs flashing at you your speed, which, as far as a safety argument is concerned, does have some effect. You do see people slam on their brakes as soon as they see their speed light up when entering town. And there
Well,
is.
yeah, well. We know Salisbury's got several speed cameras around, and so do other towns as well. They flash at you. You look at your speedometer, and you're doing 45, and it's a 30-mile-an-hour thing. And yes, you do initially hit brakes, but I think that most people start ignoring those when they know that there's no other enforcement, and the speed cameras are just speed cameras. They're not photographic. Photo cameras that are going to take a picture of your plate as you go by, and then you're going to get a ticket in the mail. I notice that our roads in Salisbury have several locations. The one coming into Salisbury from Canaan, for example, doesn't flash until you get almost at it, and then it gives you the correct speed. Hasn't been serviced in years, as far as starting to flash when you come around Bracken Tiff Corner. Listeners will know what that means, and come down the straightaway past the condominium area. That light does not on that sign go on until you're just about 100 feet from it, at which point it will give you probably the accurate speed. Sometimes it flashes earlier and doesn't give an accurate speed.
What is the fastest you've had it flash at? Don't answer the
Well, I can
question.
artificially answer that question by say 50. Anyway,
Anyway, it's an interesting debate.
Yes, it is. And we may be running out of time, so I don't know how far we can go with this, but I think that we don't need them in the in our corner in any big large youth faction. Until next show, it is Robin Leach and Jay DeMarkin, and this is Car Keys, and we hope you enjoyed it.
Car Keys with Robin Leach and Jay DeMarkin is produced at the facilities of WHDD 91.9 FM, RobinHoodRadio.com, Sharon, Connecticut.